with Clint and Danny, Lily, and the wizard. The wizard. Why the wizard?
Because he looks like a lizard.
Who?
Steve, he's so ugly. G'day, valued listeners. We are back and we've got Steve McKenna, one of the hosts of the show, who happened to win an Ironman on the weekend. So we thought it'd be very cool to have a chat to him. Clint's back. How are you, Clint?
Good, mate. We kept the post-race celebrations to a minimum mostly due to Steve's being pretty ruined after the race. So it was easy to get back to work this week.
That's probably the only reason Steve is on here. He's not in the usual post-race coma.
can we address the elephant in the room, please, Steve? This haircut of yours, mate.
I'm
amazed that you followed through because you got out of town without being actually held to account by the race organisers. But then two, it's still there. How long is that going to stay for?
Haven't decided yet, but I would have it fairly long if Winnie was fine with it, but she's a bit off me. And I've just got home, so she wouldn't leave my side. Didn't want mum to do anything, for a day. And then I got this haircut and she was like in the car awkwardly laughing, saying, "You want another haircut?" I'm like, "No." And she's like, "Open your hat." I'm like, "Well, take it off." She goes, "No, open it." And she's like getting angry. I'm like, I took it off and she was just like this real awkward laugh.
Why does she have a German accent?
Does. No, that's it. I don't know where she's got this accent. She has an accent.
She's just a little dictator. Opens your hat.
Then she just goes, "I don't like it. Hat back on."
Oh dear.
Well, I think it's great that you did it. People obviously appreciate that you don't take the sport overly seriously. Sometimes it can be hard to swallow when you're flicking through all the US athlete inspirational posts, and then it's always refreshing to see your posts, which are completely non-inspirational.
Yeah, well, the American athletes have like stickers on their bike with passion and determination and more stuff. And then that was Metzler. Joslyn's like, you know, fairly religious, so she won't race on a Sunday. And then Chelsea's like a public speaker, a motivational speaker. So yeah, they're the three US that came. Colin was fairly normal by Australian standards, but yeah, the rest are very American, I guess. There's nothing wrong with it at all, but they are very American.
I think it's just received differently there. You know, if we were to be like that, Australians would all cringe in horror.
Yeah.
Whereas Americans are like, they see something like, you know, and I like Sam Long, but Sam Long will be like, "Today I had this, this, and this, but I got it done." And everyone's like, "Fuck yeah, go Sam."
Yeah.
You say that in Australia, everyone's like, "Yeah, cool, dude."
If Steve did that and said, "Yeah, I smashed it on the week," everyone would just say, "Shut up, wanker."
Just go and shave your head.
But yeah, it's
so, the main reason we got you here, Steve, is because we know a lot of people will be just trying to get in contact, want to give you congrats and ask you a lot about the race. So we thought we would tick that box so you can so your phone stops ringing. Talk to me. So let's start from the race week. I mean, actually, no, let's go right back. Busso, you're pretty gutted, mainly because you were injured. You knew it wasn't your best performance as an athlete. We chatted about some things that needed to change, and I think you made some really good changes. Do you want to start with that for us?
Yeah, I reckon. So Cairns, if we rewind to mid last year, Cairns, I hadn't started Nerd Belts, but I was, you know, due to get a shipment and had done a pre-sale, but I hadn't started running a business yet. So I had underestimated what it would take. So we were about to go to Europe after Cairns too and fully dedicate to triathlon. But turns out when you start a business, there's all these other things that you need to do. You can't just set someone up shipping belts in Adelaide and leave. There's just so much. And then like communications, retailers that want to jump on and organizing that with the people back home as well, and then giving them extra duties constantly. And anyway, it turned out that I was just doing like 16-hour days. If you include the training, I would jump on the laptop at like, you know, 5 a.m. or 5:30. This is just up until probably the New Year's or whatever, until I allocated an employee that just took over and does a better job than me. But yeah, it was just between training sessions, quickly get to the phone and reply to anything I had to, and then finish the day, be wrecked and not recover. I'd just get straight back into nerd belt stuff or a bit of coaching or whatever. And I wasn't doing a law subject, thankfully, but I am at the moment. It's just started last week, so I might actually withdraw. I need to talk to you, Reedy, being my coach. unlike some people think that I've got a new coach. But yeah, that's it. I just have allocated nerd belts to someone, and it's given me a lot of time back. And I basically, when that first happened, you know, Christmas Day, we moved on to you know, start training properly after Christmas Day, sorry. And I kind of ignored the business for a whole month, and that's where the bulk of the work was done. And then I felt like I'd neglected it a bit too much. So slowly it crept back in, getting towards the race, but that's in line with the taper anyway. So I did a lot of work on race week.
I guess from a coach's perspective, I noticed with that stress a lot less, it seemed like you started enjoying it again. Like a lot of people ask me, oh, how different was the prep for this one than compared to Busser? And I was like, not wildly different. We stick to the same key, you know, things that we know work for you. The difference was I felt like you're absorbing the training again. You're getting better sleep. You were smiling and chatting when on the phone rather than just feeling overwhelmed and blowing up at the unfairness in the world. And I know, you know, I can only talk from my personal experience. You know, I had my best results largely under Matt Dixon, and the training was nothing like, you know, earth shattering. The difference was he always kept it relatively enjoyable for me. And I feel like some coaches, especially some very heavily weighted coach, sports scientists style coaches, they're always like, oh, if you're doing it for enjoyment, it's, you know, you're missing, you might not be ticking all the boxes, or, you know, if you have to do it for enjoyment, it's, you're not cut out for this sport. And I'm sort of like, that's a lot of crap. You know, like we all work really hard. But there is something, you're not going to love every single session, but the overall experience shouldn't be one that you're hating or that, and yeah. I think that enjoyment factor is actually really important, and coaches that miss that, and you don't need to be adding in variety for the sake of variety or anything like that, but you do need to make sure your athletes are keeping it in perspective, having fun, got other aspects of their life going well. And I feel like suddenly that had returned a lot for you. Would you say so? Would you say the enjoyment was back?
Yeah, I went riding with the group here. You know, our group here, Tri-Adelaide. And they're my mates as well. So just having fun, and they're all on board with continuous rides. So I don't have to, you know, worry that we're just going to continue to stop at cafes or soft pedal. Like everyone's pretty keen with the idea that a long endurance ride, you're supposed to just keep pedaling for, I don't know. So we'll do like 2 hours and then we'll have a coffee break and talk crap. But then we will continue to pedal and hope for no stops for a while. So yeah, everyone got really fit and it was just really fun. So I think the fun in the training, I was just starting to love the sport again, because as you guys know, I loved triathlon in Europe. I was doing a lot of it. and then I just was burnt out, like, purely because I went and gave it my all and it just backfired.
With no downtime in between and surrounded by triathletes 24/7, it's very hard.
It was pretty draining. getting to New Zealand, I was alone and working a bit, and I was like, oh God, I'm slipping back into whatever. And then Clinton and the crew rocked up, and I had heaps of fun from when they rocked up, and the stress was kind of gone. Like I was getting that chest infection coming on. So that was a little bit stressful, but like, but Clint reassured me, and plus we were just laughing. So I could tell if I was laughing and the legs felt good, I was like, well, I'm still okay. I just can't breathe.
to be honest, Steve, I was incredibly worried for you.
I'm gonna have to grab a tissue, sorry.
Yeah, you were just
Reedy's just caught my cold over the phone.
Just back to what you were saying in terms of like the way that you spending the week and spending time with you before WA and then spending time with you in New Zealand, it was like it was a different person. WA, you could tell that you were, it was a drain. It was a job. It wasn't enjoyable for you. You just, not saying you were mega negative about it, but that compared to New Zealand where you were like, I'm loving the training. I'm, you know, I'm enjoying triathlon again. And it probably comes down to that break you had after WA. But in saying the, when we turned up and you said, oh, I've got a bit of a chest thing going on, I think it might be from the fan I've been sleeping under. And you were still training really well, but mate, you'd go to bed and it sounded like I had a pack-a-day smoker sleeping in the room next to me. And it was incredibly concerning, but seemed to clear, and the race result speaks for itself, right?
Yeah, I feel like I was it was the worst sleep I've had leading into a race, but maybe I'll just, I don't know. It just got lucky. I got lucky, I think.
I don't remember ever sleeping more than about 10 minutes before a race that I won. So I think if you've had that sleep, two nights out has been pretty good, although you had no crap sleep the whole way in. But I think the build-up of fatigue is, you know, happens over weeks, and people can be surprised what you can do with a few bad nights sleep as long as there's not that like real chronic fatigue and overtraining.
My muscles are so fresh because I tapered so early with that cold.
Yeah. So I guess to talk people through it, we, you know, it wasn't even a guarantee that you were going to start. You were that sick. And then I think, you know, the way you are and the fact that you'd won Port Macquarie with a bit sick as well, we knew it wasn't below the chest. It was really just like, below the neck. It was really just a cough that was, you know, there was no fever or anything like that. So we sort of made the decision that it was worth starting. And I think I said to you, look, treat it as a long training day, make the decision at 10K on the run, whether you're going to go. But did you know straight away that you were finishing that race from the moment you got in there? Or was it like, oh, this might be a training day?
I was cramping up in the swim, and then I cramped up a lot on the bike as well. But I was just very positive. I just kept thinking, it could just be the fact that it could just be one of those cramping days where I've had it in Ironmans where you just cramp all day, but it doesn't actually get any worse, just little ones. So I had to do a bit of breaststroke kicks in the swim towards the end to get rid of the calf cramps. And then hands just kept cramping on the bike, and I was just like, I just couldn't unfold my hand sometimes. Because you're like, you're sitting like this for that long, and then you're like, but yeah, I think, I don't know. I was negative for the first, I mean, the power was great, but I had real bad abductor pain and lower back pain, but had a caffeine gel, also rode like 50K, and all of a sudden it felt effortless. So it was just that first 40 or 50K where I was like, geez, I'm pretty uncomfortable. But I think it was just that, like Clint explained that, you know, in a choppy swim like that, you're arching your back a fair bit to look more often, or like bending the lower back, I guess. So that was that pain. And then the abductor, you know, I can't really explain it. Maybe I just got blood in the legs and then they came good because the abductors and a few other things weren't, there wasn't what the power was coming, but it just wasn't feeling great. So
well, we've talked about it. I think when I coached, I actually coached Clint there for one of his races, and the wetsuit swim in a choppy water, it is a real, you see it really often that when it's rougher, the cramping is a lot higher. And it's something to do with the hyperextension of the spine for extended periods. And it seems to irritate, you know, nerves, possibly around the S5 area. And then the cramping just seems to really be triggered. So yeah, it's something that we see really regularly, right, Clint?
Yeah, there were several from the same race, and it was just like the it felt like I was having the same conversation. And then it felt exactly like the conversation that I had with Reedy after I did that race. It's like, I don't know what happened. It's never happened in training. I got on the bike and it just didn't feel right. So obviously we've worked it out now, and that's what's the cause. Do you feel like at what point in the race did Mike get to you guys? Like, he was 2.5 minutes back, Steve, and you weren't mucking around, and he just bombed it out of town. So when he got there, was the pace on, or was it like, did he get there and just sit in for a bit?
Yeah, he sat in, and I know his game. The other blokes didn't, so they were going to go with any attack, not knowing that it was just going to keep happening. So I was like, so I chased, like, it was probably that 40K mark, and I look back and Metzler and Mike are there. So I rode that course, and I assumed it was a big man course because the downhill is so long, especially with a tailwind, that that I thought they were going to catch me pretty quickly on that downhill. And Mike did. He probably put like probably 2 or 1.5 minutes into me just from View Road going downhill until it went flat finally. So they were already with me. I look back, I'm like, wow, they've just caught up like 1.5 to 2.5 minutes in like 10K or like 15K.
He must have
been. When I was watching the splits and I saw Mike was going 50K an hour and you were going 45, I was like, Steve's got a real chance now, because I was like, you can't, even as aero as Mike is, I'm like, 50K an hour is burning matches.
Yeah.
And then if you look,
yeah, we were still pushing 280 watts or something downhill.
Yeah.
So he did that. He looks like he did the same the second lap, Steve. You guys came through town and he was still there, and then he went, and at 120K, he had 90 seconds. And then from 120 till the finish of the ride, he only rode an extra minute into you over that. So it's like he bombed that downhill, went berserk, and then it just stayed steady, which was, you would have been loving that once you got off the bike and saw it was only 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, definitely. I think I was worried for the downhills. That's where he got away the second lap too. So he caught us and he got away there. But then I think it was probably disheartening for him and encouraging for us when we saw him at the turnaround and there was only 90 seconds with like, 35K left or something. Something like that. But so we looked at each other, me and Nick, and we were just like, sweet, let's push just that tiniest bit more. And anyway, he was pushing harder than me. Like the gap to him when he led was about 100 meters, and then he would sit in at the normal distance and get his recovery. But I refused to push 310 watts to keep up with him. I was like happy just to go my pace. But then he would just, after his 5 minute turn, would just pull up and wait for me to come through. I'm like,
so
wait.
I want to talk about that more, Steve, because I've sort of been trying to drill it in over and over since Busso. Was obviously you were very aggressive in Busso. You kept chasing. You were the one who always was always chasing Daniel when he would break away. And I know that your running is at a level that other people can only dream of. Like, I think the 230 range is definitely, especially if New Zealand wasn't that hard, I think you're in 230 something shape off the bike. And so I really wanted you to see that, hey, you can make this a lot less painful for yourself. You can probably go 7 to 10 minutes quicker if we just stop chasing people on the bike. And then you did it nearly perfectly, not quite. There was still a little bit of chasing of Mike, but in general, you stuck to the guns, and the back third of your power was fantastic compared to other races because of that, I think.
Yeah, I was in disbelief. I was excited that it was an uphill into the wind at the end, because you don't really have a choice but to push the power. So I thought that was a positive. But yeah, so the first time he went was just after that 50K mark where we went through an aid station, and I knew this is where Mike goes. So I'll get to the front for this, and I'll make the other guys chase and not me. So it gave me a chance to like get the power up slower and let them come past me, grab him. And I jumped on the foot, like at the back, and I was just kind of like, oh, I don't want to do this. I want to let them go, but it's too early in the race. So I had to go with it just in case Metz and Nick you know, got like 10 minutes on me as well. So I went with it. And then at the halfway mark, he went again, going up the hill. And at that point, I should have just let him go. And I stupidly, you know, there was no reason for me to do it. Metz didn't even go. He was riding conservative and he didn't come with. And I went, I was like, oh, oh. And it's like the reaction was too quick. I went for it. And then I was like, oh, you've committed. He might only go for a minute. And every minute I was like, oh, he might just do one more minute and then he'll give up. Because then we get a real quick ride, you know, for this lap with him working with us still. And it got to like 8 minutes and I was like, I looked back at Nick. I'm like, I'm done. I'm not, you know, I'm letting him go. And he comes past and goes, I will try. I will try to get him. I'm like, no.
Was it Winnie or was it? Or was it Nick?
Yeah. I was like, don't go. And he didn't hear me. He went. So then I kind of like half-assed getting back onto them, and Mike let him go to the front stupidly. So I caught them again. Mike looked back and then just bombed up View Road and sprinted away again once he saw me. So I just thought I was very confident in my power. So yeah, when Nick was doing like higher power than me and I couldn't get a, you know, 12 meter draft on him, I just thought I'll stick to my power. We're basically just riding at my power, my pace this whole lap, because he's just going harder and then easier. And I liked my tactic better of just sticking to one power.
Awesome. And then on the run, how bad was the cough? When did you know that you were on for a pretty good day, especially versus Mike? Did you see early on that Mike was struggling? Or...
So yeah, in the run, I felt pretty good. And the cough wasn't really an issue by that point in the day, because I had, I'd coughed so much in the swim that, you know, it's more just, the cough is only bad when I'm trying to get stuff up. So in the mornings, like before this, I had to get a tiny bit up, but this is the best morning I've had by far, in like a week and a half. So yeah, there's just heaps of yellow crap coming up in the mornings. And slowly throughout the day, I've cleared it kind of, and with cough medicine and whatnot. So in the morning I had cough medicine, and then in the warm up for the swim, probably unloaded a liter of yellow into the water. Got going and continued a little bit of that in the swim. But then in the bike, you know, I coughed a few times and just quickly spat to the side. This is disgusting, by the way, but I'm sorry. But and then on the run, yeah, there was nothing to clear. I was just feeling pretty good.
So you went through halfway in the run. Like, you obviously got off the bike with Nick, and by halfway in the run, you're what, a minute 16 up, and you're running quicker than him. And I was like, it was kind of, oh, it looks like a foregone conclusion here. Like, you've gone past Mike. He was starting to hurt. And at what point did it start to get a bit like concerning?
Yeah, I don't know what to believe with Nick. I was like, he's such a good bloke. He's like making these jokes and telling me I'm going to win the whole day and congratulating me when we were starting the run. I'm like, this is hilarious. This guy's
and
like,
asking you for a nerd belt in T2, didn't he?
Yeah. We got to T2. He's like, I've been cramping all day. You're the champion. You're the champion. Congrats. I'm like, yeah. What? He's saying that at the end of the bike as well. I'm like, dude, you're riding away from me half the time. I'm like, you're still in this. And he keeps saying congratulations. So then I'm like, this guy is either taking the piss out of me and like, you know, disarming me, yeah, or he's just like really battling and being honest. But he's a battler. Like, I think he's been second and won Umbrian Man, and he was second at Lanzarote Ironman. So he's solid, especially on a bike, I guess. But yeah, similar to me, he had the cramping issues all day and he was just telling me. I didn't want to tell anyone, because I'd like them not to know that I'm battling. Because anyway, he didn't need to know I was battling. He just came up so hard on me on that third lap. I think, like, I just thought he was gone. So when I took over Mike and had a minute 30 on him, I was like, I think, you know, if I just run 4 minute pace, I've won this and I can really enjoy it. And then I looked back and I'm like, Nick's there as well. Like, I thought he was gone 5 minutes back, like, you know, ages ago, because I was so focused on Mike. And he just kept that distance apparently. So I was a bit worried. We did the turnaround to start the third lap, and within like 2K he had overtaken me. And then he started running away very quickly too. Oh no, that was probably the last lap he did that, wasn't it? But yeah, he and I'm like,
you came through in the for your last lap, and he'd caught you then. So he'd run 90 seconds into you into the lap, and you came past. And I said, like, you're good, just stay there. And you're like, yeah, I'm good. And then you get, you went like this and went cramping. And you put on the worst game face I've ever seen. It's like, yeah, I'm good, right behind him, and you were clear.
And then I'm like, miming that I'm cramping.
trying to give a thumbs up. Thumb cramp.
I wanted him to hear good, but then I'll mime, I'm cramping, and I'm going to come second.
So as you came around for the last lap, you were together, and he actually put a bit of time in there. Steve, so you went down past the Love Taupo sign down the hill. Did he get a bit of a gap there? And at what point did you get back?
I was running 340 pace. I thought, all right, just one last crack with the tailwind. Don't let him get away. And I think Clayton Fattel was riding next to me. He's like, nah, that headwind, he's going to suffer. You've got him. And I'm like, I don't know, man. He's putting like 5 seconds per cane to me, maybe more. He already had 20 seconds on me by the time we got to the bottom of that hill and onto the running path. So that's only like 3K into the lap, and he's already 30 seconds ahead. And then for some reason on that running path, I think my caffeine, my ninth caffeine gel really hit. and I just started grunting and the gap stayed the same. I didn't catch up, but then I got to like the far turnaround area, and Luke McKenzie, Braden Curry and his wife were there, and I run past them. I'm just like, man, what has happened? Like, because they were just like, you know, thought I'd won as well, and cheering on as we went each lap. And then I'm like, man, this guy's amazing. Like, I'm just, I can't believe where he's come from. I thought he was gone. And then Luke goes, I reckon he's gone again. I'm like, really? So then I look around the corner and just start sprinting in a slow motion sort of sprint. And then I get around to the aid station, and he's walking. So I just attacked, and he just went with me. And then up the hill, he's like, you've got it. Congrats, champion. I'm like, stop doing that. he's like pulling my leg again. He's like, I don't know what to, like, it's a good tactic. I'm so confused when he does it.
It's so funny. That part of the course, like in the days before the race, we actually drove out there, and I just said, like, this part here is certainly somewhere I think people's wheels will fall off. Like, you come out of that aid station, you get a drink, and you just got that feeling of, I'll just walk while I drink. And then after the race, you said it's exactly where it happened. And then you said as you got up further, he had someone riding near him who was giving him splits to third, and that gave you a bit more confidence. Is that right?
Yeah, because I could hear his footsteps right behind me still, maybe 5 meters by now, nearly at the top of that hill. And I did think of you at that aid station, by the way. I was like, Clint was right. People are walking here. And but anyway, his mate in Dutch, but it was very obvious he was saying 5 seconds to third. And then I just sprinted the last bit of that hill and sprinted down the hill as fast as I could to get like some sort of, you know, 100 meter gap just to break him. And it didn't break him. Thought it would, but he, the gap stayed at like 100, 150 for like, probably until 2K to go. So I was really stressed. I think I said on the Fitter Radio podcast, I was like asking anyone who would listen how far he is. And like, even like a lady with walking a dog has nothing to do with the race. I'm like, how far is he? And she's just like, I don't know. What are you talking about?
Well, at that exact point, the tracker stopped working. And so I was at the finish line, Pete. I was trying to get updates from Pete. They didn't have updates, and so you would have just been getting all kinds of random information on course, which was terrible. And as you came around that last turn, like, I've seen you pull a lot of ugly faces in triathlons, Steve, but that was an absolute 10 out of 10 ugly face. And it turns out you could have enjoyed the last kilometer, because it was what, 2 minutes or something in the end.
Yeah. Did not enjoy it at all. I sprinted up that hill, the legs. I reckon it added a day of limping.
So I guess, Steve, huge congrats. In the space of 18 months, oh, sorry, 2 years, you've had two Ironman wins, a second place at the Asia Pac Champs in Cairns. And we know from sweat testing and looking at your sweat rates and things like that, you're actually very suited to Kona. So is that For the listeners, that's the main focus from here. And also to reinforce it in your head, if it is.
Yeah. Like last year, I put all the eggs in one basket, being 17.3 worlds. But I'm not actually worried about doing that again at all. I screwed that up with overtraining and doing too much and blah blah blah. Like this was a mediocre training block. If I said it the whole time, I've done nothing impressive yet. And I didn't impress myself once. Only at the end where we did a wetsuit session, I was like, whoa, I'm pretty fit, like the fittest I've ever been swimming. But you just can't tell in summer because your heart rate's so much higher.
And also, I think you've stopped. You used to always, if I gave you, 10 times 1K or whatever the session was, you would always add in one or two at the end to sort of validate to yourself where you were at with your fitness. And I think now you've learned to just trust. First of all, I don't care because I know if you're doing the work that with the amount of work you're getting through and if the recovery scores are good, I know you're getting very fit. I don't feel like you now have more confidence that if you tick the boxes that you don't have to do those little validating moments in sessions. And on race day, it's going to be there, which is really cool. I think that there's that level of trust now.
Yeah. I also enjoy the fact that I can ride on race week and not have to test myself there either and risk making the leg. Like race week, I'll push like 150 watts on rides. I don't need to go and do any surges to make sure I can push 280. I know I can. It's very easy to do. Or, whatever it was in the race, 285, I think near 285 somewhere. But yeah, it seems like I reckon the run is going to get a lot better, as you said, Reedy, with if I find a race where I can finally just push my power and not do like two times, I think it was 6 and 9 minutes with Mike. It doesn't sound like that much over 180K, but it definitely, my experience in Busso, everything little like that counts.
It definitely adds up. Those little, everyone knows that the glycogen depletion rate is not linear. And once you cross a certain threshold, it starts adding minutes onto your run. I think it's exciting because that power that you're putting out for your weight, I mean, especially now as we're getting more and more aerodynamic, it's very competitive in Kona for that power. And we know you've got the run to do well there and the swim to comfortably be in the front for you. So all the pieces are there. Sponsors, I would be getting on board this train before it's too late and you can't afford him.
Can we get, like, I mean, you've set the bar really high with the robot and then the frullet. Can we get like a drastic prediction for Hawaii, like top 10 or top 5? What will you do? Give us something crazy.
I'd definitely get a tattoo of something. I can get a tattoo of something really stupid and pointless, like a rock. Like everyone will go, what's that?
I think if you go top 5 in Kona, you have to get a tattoo. Justin Metzler rules. Something that you really, I don't know why you have to punish yourself when you do well though.
Mate said, he goes, he just texted me a simple one before he even said congrats. You know, you can allocate frolics to people when you win. You don't have to punish yourself.
I spent the day after the race saying to Steve, I'm like, if they put pressure on you on stage or whatever, just say that I got a message from your wife and it's a real non-negotiable and just blame me. Steve just goes home and still goes and does it.
Can I just say, this is classic Steve. I said, oh, cool, now we can take a few weeks off and, really rest up and recover, get rid of this cough. And he's like, oh, there's a race in 2 weeks. It's got $2,000 and this and that. And I said, Steve, we'll find another way to make that $2,000 if you really need it. But and the way that we do want to do that, and this is a bit of a shameless plug, but the hardest thing about for us at RPG Coaching is we don't have, we try and keep the quality at a certain level, we don't have unlimited spots with coaching. And so I hesitated to do this for years and years, but we started selling training programs in Training Peaks, and it certainly is not coaching, but it is a great way for people to have some structure and a guide around how they would do their training. And Steve and I have decided to do a work together on putting out an Ironman program that is very much is built around the way we've got success with Steve. It's not going to work for everyone. It's definitely fairly high volume. It's more for the elite age grouper to pro athlete, but it is coming. It's going to have little videos from Steve in there, giving some tips around certain things, lots of insights, written insights from me of why we do the certain sessions. So that is coming. It will be in the Training Peaks library within the next 2 weeks. You just have to search RPG Coaching or Tim Reed and you will be able to find it. We'll call it the Steve McKenna Iron Man method, something like that.
But you have to do the robot
and then in the spoiler alert, the post-race recovery involves a trip to the barber to get a haircut.
Yeah. Giving you every tip that I've got.
Look, this was primarily an interview with Steve about his race. I want to congrats to Chelsea Sodaro. Amazing race. Just showed her class and why she is a world champion. Yeah, fantastic race from her. Clint, you want to touch on the other female podium getters? It was a deep women's field, man.
It was like when it came out, the field came out, I was very surprised about how deep it went with the way that the structure of the year for a lot of them has been. To see like four-time Olympians in ninth, two-time Olympians in 10th, it was a really, really solid field. Chelsea set it up well. I think there was five of them out of the water together. It broke up pretty quickly. Her and Jocelyn rode together for a lot of the day. Chelsea got a penalty just after halfway on the bike, but then once I hit the run, it was just like a foregone conclusion. She ran so efficiently. It was a 2:249 run for her. So like I'd like confidently say that's her best performance outside of her Kona win. And the field ran so deep. So it's really good to see yet again, the chicks really stepping up and giving us good racing to watch. So yeah, it was great.
And Clint, I reckon it's interesting that Kate was disappointed with her race because I thought about it more over the last few days. She came eighth. She's your pro. And her standards are bloody high because if I was 2 years into picking up this sport and not having ever done it before, I would not be expecting to come fifth and eighth in races.
Yeah, she beat two Olympians. And yeah. Part of me is disappointed that she's disappointed in that aspect, but I'd never want that to be lost. You never want someone to...
Incredible.
Yeah, like if pros are forever the optimist, then like, you know, maybe they'll be content with results like that. And she just comes home and it's just like, right, this and this is better. This is what we're going to do. We have conversations about it and it's like, all right, let's get better and let's be further up the food chain. So
well, that's incredible. 2 years in, I would not have even done an Ironman till 4 years in. And I was a pleb until 5 years in. So she's already killing it.
Mate, it's really exciting and it's, watch this space.
Yeah. And I think the only shout out I want to make is Ben Hamilton. He came third and I think honestly, it does help that he did his whole day alone. That kind of helps sometimes with the likes of Mike's around in the front bunch, but and like looking at each other and whatnot and slowing down every now and then. But I feel like that was incredible what he did alone. Like, you know, like alone is still very hard, especially in the head. So yeah, whatever his time was amazing.
He was 8:08 with a 2:47 marathon, and I think that was his first Ironman. So like that's pretty cool. And just to see, you got a lot. Like Nick Thompson got it in WA with all the local support. Ben had the same there. His whole family there with signs going berserk. Like that's got to add up, right? So
yeah, and also to Mike, I mean, you got to respect that he's in it to win it, and you know it backfired a little bit, but it does make the racing bloody exciting, and so don't change, especially if Steve keeps winning. That's a wrap, hey fellas. Thanks for coming on, Sleven and Clint. Have a great day. We will be back pretty soon. We've got a huge guest in the works. I won't say the name in case it falls through. Over and out. Oh, do you want to do a nerd belt ad, Steve? Any discount codes we can do?
to be fair, standing on the podium with your with the tape above your head with a nerd belt on is the best advertising you'd ever do, mate.
Yeah, I did think walking, sorry, running down the finish sheet, I thought, fuck yeah, this is great for nerd belts.
Yeah, did you I'll do the robot.
Hopefully they zoom in on the nerd belt.
Next time, don't hold up the banner. Just hold up the nerd belt.
Yeah. No, I don't need to plug it. Everyone listening here has heard a lot about nerd belts, but I will say it's the only reason I won.
No, actually, I will give it a bit of give more of a plug to the other pros, Steve. Like walking around town, dealing with the other pros during the week, you had a few of them say, like ask you about it and be very supportive about you like starting that. And then also you'd say, oh, I'll send you one to trial. And every one of them said, no, I'll pay for it. I'm more than happy to support you. So I think that's really awesome. So shout out to those guys who are willing to support other pros.
Yeah, it's cool. I think pros obviously really do look out for each other. It's nice to see. I don't know if it's the same in ITU. They're probably like slit your tires after they say something like that. But...
Righto, fellas. I've got to drop kids. I'll speak to you later. Thanks. Good to chat.
Thanks, guys.
Be classy.
Be classy.